He is immortal. Born in the Highlands of Scotland 400 years ago, he is not alone. There are others like him. Some good, some evil. For centuries, he has battled the forces of darkness, with holy ground his only refuge. He cannot die unless you take his head and with it his power. In the end, there can be only one. He is Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 3, Episode 17, Take Back the Night. And here to talk with you about it as we are every week, I'm your host Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and with me, as always, is Audie. How you doing this week?
Doing all right, man. It's getting a little chilly here, or at least chilly for Georgia.
Yeah, it's getting chilly here too. It is dropping down into the 30s Fahrenheit as the high during the day, which is not fun. I don't mind, like, I don't like hot weather, but bitingly cold, like, take the dog out for a walk and realize that I shouldn't live somewhere where the air hurts my face. Yeah. It's never fun. But I adjust, you know, wear a sweater, all that good stuff. In my house is fine. I don't keep my temperature up super high, but it's fine inside. It's just those times I got to go outside when it's the wind that does it. The air is cold enough, and then that wind gets moving, and it's just brutal. But, you know, happens every year.
Yeah, it was cool here today. Cool enough that I could cut the grass without sweating my arse off. So I appreciated that.
That's always good. So we are coming off the three-episode Kallus cycle, as it's referred to. Three of the better episodes, three of the best episodes we have seen yet. And this episode here, Take Back the Night, there's going to be a little bit of a letdown. There's no way around that kind of thing, but it's not much of a letdown.
Not really. I mean, I'll say this. The beginning, the way they were shooting stuff, I was like, oh, is this going to be a crappy episode? And then it started picking up and the story went the way it was. I was like, oh, no. Okay.
Yes. Yes. I am going to agree with you on that. It got better. And it's sort of by the end of the episode, they had pulled themselves up from what could have potentially just been kind of a meh to crap episode. Mm-hmm. So I was pleased with that. It does have some interesting things to kind of ponder in it, and some really good. The show is moving from a fully episodic kind of Immortal of the Week format into not completely serialized, but there's more threads that are being pulled at. And we're seeing things like subplots that span multiple episodes instead of only ever being in a single episode and then never talked about again. Which is pretty cool. So I do enjoy that. I think before we kind of talk about the episode or not, I'm going to fire up one of these tapes and listen to a Watcher Chronicle. You want to listen with me? All right.
Yeah.
May 1st, 1995. MacLeod was at the racetrack today, watching Richie do some time trials when he was pickpocketed by a young boy. Of course, the Immortal caught him after the fact, but didn't turn him in. As he was leaving, the boy jumped into his car and he drove him back to town. I managed to follow them back into Paris when he stopped near some abandoned buildings in a suspect part of town and got out. He ran into another Immortal, a woman by the name of Cairdwyn, who looked to be on the warpath. I need to get in touch with Deborah Atkins. She's her watcher. I wonder what happened.
So we open up at a restaurant. We see a couple, and they're sitting. They're having a discussion over dinner. It's getting, I wouldn't call it heated, but it's not, there's a little bit of contention going on. The man's talking about some sort of great opportunity, but they have to move. And she doesn't want to move. It's in Madrid, and all their family and all their friends are in Paris. And he says, well, it's the opportunity of a lifetime. And she responds with, well, you know, there'll be other opportunities. And I like that because it's a nice kind of easy way to slide in where he says, well, look, this is the opportunity of my lifetime. I might not get another one. Not all of us live forever.
Yeah.
And which, you know, immediately has her being like, look, let's continue this in private. And he gets up visibly upset, but he's just like, I'm just going to go get the car. All right. And he leaves. Well, as he's walking to get the car, which apparently he parked like several blocks away across the river. But as he's walking to get the car, he gets accosted by some thugs on the street. Just some random, like it was a gang of like five or six kids, basically, or young men. They take his wallet. They're trying to take his watch. And then just as the woman is coming out and looking for him, she watches him get shot.
Yeah.
So she runs up and she gets shot too. And we see her, you know, fall and die and fade to black. Yeah. Come back. We're at the racetrack. Richie's back out doing some more time trials. He's out there racing with Saracen Racing as always. But now Duncan and Maurice are there watching. And I love the exchange between Maurice and Duncan. It's just a great moment where, because Maurice is fairly nervous and he's like, don't you ever worry he's going to get hurt? He's like, these young men, they think they can live forever. So we've had that joke now twice in the episode. But Richie, meanwhile, is pushing things pretty hard. He's racing somewhat recklessly is what kind of what they're trying to get across, especially with him dragging one knee on one of the turns real bad. So, you know, Duncan is concerned that Richie might be pushing himself a little bit too hard, knowing he can't die, knowing he can heal from a broken leg. And Richie is Richie, and he just kind of brushes it off. But I will say, not in the way that season one Richie would have.
Right.
So, which we'll talk about. So Duncan goes to leave the track, and one of the kids from the night before bumps into him and picks his pocket, which Duncan almost realizes almost instantly.
Because
this isn't Duncan's first rodeo. So he tracks tracks the kid, gets his wallet back. That was another one of those great exchanges where he's like, I'd like my wallet back, please. Which one? Whichever one has my driver's license in it. he takes the kid's wallet and I guess takes the money out of it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Is sort of what it is. But he goes to leave and the kid just hops in the car with him and starts telling him a sob story about his sister that needs an operation and you know, Duncan's not buying any of it. And the kid even knows that this guy's not buying any of it, but
right.
Duncan drives him back towards Paris anyway, and takes him back into town. As they're getting closer to, where he's going to drop him off, Duncan feels an immortal. So he hops out of the car, tells Paolo, the young boy, stay put. And he goes in, he's following the buzz, trying to find out who this is. And when he comes around the corner, he finds a dead body in the building. And then as he continues searching around, and Paolo, of course, gets out of the car because what kid in a TV show or a movie ever does what the adult tells him to do.
Right.
And goes inside, and Duncan comes across the woman that we saw killed. And she's got a sword in her hand and war paint on her face, and she is she's on the hunt, which Duncan and her know each other. Her name is, and I'm going to probably mispronounce this, but I'm going to try, Ciaradwyn. And
that sounds good.
Yeah, and she was married to the man who was killed, and she is hunting. And it's a great exchange because they see each other, and Duncan is like, this isn't your part of town. Are you just out for a walk, or are you hunting? And her response is, I'm hunting. What about you? And they sort of have like a standoff for a second. And Duncan's like, yeah, there's a dead body over here. Please tell me that wasn't you. And she's like, it was, but they killed my husband. And sort of in that conversation, Duncan realizes why she's doing what she's doing. And also sort of knows there's no talking her out of this at this point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
well, there's no talking out of her, and he doesn't know the full situation yet, so he has no argument to stand on against her.
And especially once he finds out that she lost her husband, he sort of backs off.
Right.
She leaves, but Paolo overheard all of this, so he saw this woman that the night before he saw get shot and killed in front of him, standing there with a sword, and there's a dead body in the room too, which was the guy who shot her. So, oh boy, that's an interesting moment for them. Yeah. So after that, most of the episode involves kind of Paulo wanting to not get his brother killed, but then the rest of the gang deciding. So Duncan eventually talks Kierdwin down and convinces her not to go after these thugs. They have her, the two of them have kind of a conversation about kind of falling in love with mortals and whatnot. Duncan lets slip that, yes, he does really care for Anne, that he kind of loves her. Kierdwin is like, well, does she know about you? Why didn't you tell her this and that? And, you know, because Duncan's still reluctant. He doesn't want to divulge that. He's trying to protect her. But he eventually convinces Kierdwin not to go after these other guys. She killed the one that pulled the trigger. There's nothing else to go after. It doesn't solve anything. And we also get some more revealed through a couple of our flashbacks that we'll talk about. So she agrees, but the thugs, they don't. So they go after her. And luckily Duncan finds out in enough time to get there and help mitigate the situation and make sure that nobody else has to die. Mm-hmm. The cops show up. And that's how things end. Kierdwin basically is on her own now, and Duncan goes back to his life. But we also have our subplot of Richie. So Richie, as we talked about, has been doing his time trials. Well, in his last one, I don't know if it was supposed to be a time trial or a race. It's always hard to tell.
Yeah, I think the first one with Duncan and Maurice there the first time was just a time trial.
Yeah.
I think that second one was a race.
And during the race, with Duncan and Maurice there watching, he and his teammate Basil, who have been butting heads, kind of exchange back and forth and have a crash.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the crash, the bikes explode. We cut to Richie showing up at the barge wrapped up in a blanket. And it's a great moment when Duncan's like, "So you made it out of the morgue, okay?"
And he's like, yeah, getting across town without any clothes was a trick.
Yeah. So, you've got Richie died in the crash, and unfortunately so did Basil. But Richie now basically has to change his whole life. He can't stay in Paris. He can't really stay in much of Europe, according to Duncan.
Right.
And he's got to live with the fact that he caused the death of a person. During the race, because there was animosity between the two of them, Richie and Basil, and it came out on the track and they both crashed and burned, literally. Which was a really cool stunt, by the way.
Yeah.
Props to those stunt guys for, they may have been wearing leathers, but that still can't feel good to slide across the tarmac like that.
Yeah.
At that speed. For real. Richie is, Richie's in a rough spot, and Duncan makes a decision involving Anne that we'll talk about, and that's where we end things. So
yeah,
it's a very simplified plot. There is no kind of evil immortal. There's no showdown, which is cool, especially after the last couple of episodes. Mm. Kind of a nice palate cleanser. Overall, I enjoyed this one. Quite a bit. The end, as we got, I would say past like the 35-minute mark, those last 10 to 15 minutes are what tied it all together and really kind of put a bow on it and made it really good.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, this is one of those episodes where it's not about the villain as much as it's about just immortality, and we get some, you know, deep diving into that.
Yep, exactly. So we've got some couple of special guests to talk about. I guess we should do that.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a killer.
So am I.
There's a dead man in the warehouse back there, killed by a sword.
So?
Tell me it wasn't you.
So, special guest this week, Kim Johnson Ulrich plays Kierdwin, and she's our main special guest. I thought she was pretty good. The character, I would say the only thing is, I want kind of more of that character. Because we find out that she was alive as far back as 60 AD, living in England, fighting Romans.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I really like that first, the way they transition, and we'll talk about it more in the first flashback segment, or the flashback segment, but that the way they transition to that flashback and kind of give us some backstory for her, and then we see that juxtaposed with her in present day, kind of gearing up to go out and hunt these guys. And the main thing with her is that I just want more of the character to have her be that old, and we don't find out enough about her.
Yeah. That would have been,
but I thought her performance was good. I thought that mm-hmm. she managed to kind of capture a few different aspects of this character in a short amount of time. Whether it was the warrior woman or the vengeful one, or the one that kind of is more like, violence isn't the answer.
Mm-hmm.
In the other flashback, I liked her. I thought she was fine. She could have come back. They don't kill the character off. She's not evil.
Right.
And I also thought it was interesting to have her have a romantic link to Duncan in the past that they don't play on in the present.
Right. Yeah.
But they also don't, like, they don't, not only do they not kind of use that in the present, they don't even acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
I
think it's one of those things where it's like Duncan and Caradwyn know each other. Obviously, mm-hmm. we learn in the flashbacks that they really knew each other.
Yeah.
But it makes it easier for the scene where they're just hanging out talking work a lot easier and faster to be like, oh, they really knew each other. So they're going to have a heartfelt conversation
like this
out of nowhere. For anyone else, it'd feel like out of nowhere. But knowing their history, it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, they were able to, by showing their past and their past intimacy, it makes sense how they would have that connection. I just thought mm-hmm. it was really cool to not have like there be any sort of romantic tension to them present day.
Right.
You know, there's tension.
This is not Amanda.
No, it's not Amanda at all. No. And like there's tension when he first runs into her, but it's not romantic tension. It's more like, all right, I haven't seen you in a while and you've got a sword. What's mm-hmm. going on? Like I'm in a room, I'm in a building with a dead guy and you and a sword. What's happening? And
right.
But I liked the dynamic of the two of them because he's able to talk her down. And as we find out in the flashback, she was able to kind of talk him down a little bit when he was younger. So, yeah. It was really cool. She was great.
That's the only thing I wish they played up a little bit more in that dynamic. I don't know. I just felt like you said, I wish we got more of her. I wish we got more explanation of where she came to now.
Yeah.
And how she is now. And like, maybe even like, I put down the sword a long time ago and now I have to pick it up because of these bozos, you know?
Yeah, it could have been something like she stopped, you know, she kind of got herself out of the game when she met this mortal 15 years ago. And I did love that scene with the two of them sharing a bottle of wine and her reminiscing mm-hmm. because the way you could tell that even though she's supposed to be close to 2,000 years old, that this may have been her first time really having a deep relationship with a mortal. Where she really connected, because just the way that scene played out and the way that she talked about him was really cool. Mm-hmm. So I did enjoy that quite a bit. She was good. So I don't remember her from anything else as an actor. It's like she looked familiar, but I couldn't place her from anything.
I think I looked at her IMDb. She did a lot of soap stuff later on.
Like, I saw this that.
Was her earlier in her career. So.
But yeah, she was great. Mark Edward Leon played Paolo. And honestly, mm-hmm. I thought he was good.
He was good. I don't know. Something about him just weirded me out. I can't put a finger on it, but
you know, it's interesting because I think part of it is that he's a young French kid with an American accent. And you can tell that it's his voice.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't dub him, but everyone else in that gang were being dubbed. So they were obviously French actors that
right.
they were dubbing with slightly less thick French accents. So he felt like weirdly out of place, but also he looks okay. Do you remember the actor who played the fairy in Legend?
Yes, I know what you're talking
he
about.
He looks kind of like her, slash the young kid that played the kind of goblin fairy in Legend as well. He's got that similar, there's something similar about his face, is what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
And so I think that is part of why he kind of was a little weird looking to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean weird in a bad way. I just mean like unique, like, huh, there's something off about that person. There's something different about them. I don't know how to put it. With like, none of this is a negative. It's just, he stood out.
He did. I think the other thing that threw me off is his name was Paolo.
Yeah.
And he was like the most straight English speaking kind of person. I was like, come on. With a name like that in Europe, let him play with an accent of some sort, one way or another.
Yeah. I have to wonder how the casting went for that. But I thought his performance, like, I thought he was actually pretty good because, and I referenced it in kind of breaking down the show, but in the scene where he hops into the car with Duncan, you can tell, like, the way they're playing that scene is he's telling the story to Duncan, which Duncan isn't believing, and the kid knows he doesn't believe him, but he's giving him the story anyway. Yeah. And I liked that because it's like this kid is street smart enough to know, like, his you know, bull is not passing muster, but he's mm-hmm. it's like almost like a practice thing that he does.
Right.
So I enjoyed that. But he wasn't bad at all.
No, not at all.
And the only other one I really wanted to mention, because the rest of it's all very small parts, was Ben Pullen as Bonnie Prince Charlie. I don't know what it was about him and the way that he played the character, but I just liked his Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Uh-huh.
Because he kind of almost had like a little bit of a wink to everything he was mm-hmm. doing. Like, and I liked that. And the fact that Bonnie Prince Charlie like goes with dressing in drag in order to travel was awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Just wanted to mention him.
For those of you not in the know, Bonnie Prince Charlie is an actual historical figure. Like, mm-hmm. I had to look this up because this is how terrible my history knowledge was. But this is timed right around where he's, retreating from a terrible battle and
yep.
all this kind of stuff. So that's really interesting where there's a lot of name drops in this show about people dealing with actual historical facts mm-hmm. or historical persons. This is one of the few times where we've seen an actual historical person being played and, you know, Duncan or whoever dealing with him. And so that was really interesting. And they did it in a way that you can easily slide into history and mm-hmm. whatnot. It does not take away anything from their actual known historical background.
Yeah, it was great the way, because you're right. Normally we just hear reference to any kind of historical figures or historical moments. And this is actually Bonnie Prince Charlie. And it's right around, you know, mm-hmm. the timeline matches up. I appreciate stuff like that. So, yeah, it's good work. Good work from the special guest. Nothing that's going to blow your socks off. It's obviously, again, we're coming off the Mythos episode where you had David Robb for his third straight episode as Kallus and Mythos right. and Peter Wingfield just crushing that. But all your kind of special guests, especially Kim Johnson Ulrich, I think mm-hmm. Probably did about as good as you could with Kierdwin as we were going to see.
And you know, she came in as a guest star and had really great chemistry with Adrian Paul. It felt like she was somebody that he knew from a long time ago. So, you know, not just, hey, they did a good job. It's like, she fit with him really well.
Yeah. Yep. And that's not easy to do. So
mm-hmm.
very cool. Good work from special guests.
Yeah.
Angus, the first man that laughs can have a back of your hand.
Any laughter will get more than a back of my hand, sire.
So flashbacks this week are broken up into, it's basically two flashbacks broken up into a couple of small pieces. And the first one just deals with Kierdwin. And it's set in England in 60 AD, and they're fighting Romans. What I liked about that was it gave us some background as to her warrior nature. So at that point in the episode, all we've seen her do is have a conversation with her husband and get shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then here she is putting this war paint on. And then I was trying to figure out, was the stuff on her arm, was that paint? Do you think that was painted on, or was that supposed to be a tattoo? Because I see it later in the episode.
I did not notice that. Probably a tattoo.
But yet she's also kind of drawing on it at one point. I don't know. But she's putting that stuff on, and then we get the flashback as she's remembering her first death. And the main thing with that flashback was I liked the costuming. I think that that was pretty good. It definitely looks like it was shot in the same forest that they use later on for the other flashback, right. Which is fine. But I liked that they put a filter over this one. And it wasn't just a sepia or like a grayscale. It kind of had a reddish brown.
Right.
More red than brown filter to it to give it just a different look. So I enjoyed that. Again, it's a very simple, very quick flashback. It's basically her going into battle, suffering her first death, and then the aftermath of that, waking up.
Right.
And burying her friends. And we see another really cool transition where she takes that necklace that she has off. And then when she clasps it back together, we flash right to her in present day, putting it back on before she zips up the motorcycle jacket.
Yeah. Couple things about this. This first flashback, I appreciated the way they artistically went back and forth between the flashback and present day with her getting ready in present to go hunting, showing her, you know, where she was in England in 60 AD. Just that whole back and forth, like they did really good being very artistically with their flashbacks this episode. I also really appreciated when the English are fighting the Romans, and it's just like it turns into a battle. It's like blah blah blah. It's like, okay, everybody's fighting each other. And then when the Romans get their heads together and kind of form a phalanx, I was like, oh, somebody is actually using their history knowledge for a change. And try to come together like they would if a battle like this would happen. It's like, okay, we're caught off guard. All right, now, come on, guys, get together. We're Romans here, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. That was neat. Could have been a little better, maybe. You know,
I mean, sure, it probably could have been, but they made the effort. They tried to have that make sense, where you've got this regimented Roman army going up against a bunch of Celts, basically, I think is what they were. I can't remember. I know there's an actual term for what part of England they were in and what kind of tribes those were. But they were very Celt looking. And so I liked that. I'm with you on that. That was a cool visual thing to see. And it's just like, it's a small thing that you wouldn't think about initially. But if you think back on it, you're like, oh yeah, okay, that's cool. It's something different than just mayhem and people fighting all over the place, which they had and would happen. But you're right. Those Romans would form back up at some point.
Yeah. At first, I was thinking, I was like, these are Romans. Why are they just all like all around like this? And then they formed up together. I was like, oh, okay, good. All right.
Yep.
Sorry, I questioned you, Highlander.
And then our second flashback takes place in Scotland in 1746. We mentioned earlier with Duncan is traveling with Bonnie Prince Charlie as they're making a retreat of sorts. Duncan tells him, you know, there's a boat waiting for you. And I like how Charlie, he doesn't want to just run away, but he also knows that he kind of, in some ways he has to. And Duncan is sort of an advisor and basically telling him, look, you're better. You're more important to us alive. We need you. And so they stop at an inn. Duncan knows nearby and has run, or at least at the inn is Ciaradwyn.
Right.
Although now she's going by Flora MacDonald. Again, another quick moment that we'll see in a lot of opening sequences is her jumping up into his arms as they see each other and all of that. I did also very much like her just embarrassing the hell out of herself with, you know, talking about the ragtag group that Duncan's got with him, and like, because Duncan's like, shut up. And she's like, what is it? Who does he think he is? Bonnie Prince Charlie? And he pulls the hood back and it's like, him.
Indeed I do.
And then I mentioned, you know, she helps him get dressed in drag so that he can escape looking like a woman, or as close to that as they're going to get him. And then the last part with him is walking away with his new guy, Angus, because Duncan's like, look, I'm going to stay here and defeat some more of these English, because they're killing people. And as Charlie's leaving, he's like, the first man who laughs can get the back of your hand, Angus. So he's taking it in stride, but Duncan sticks around. And even though Ciaradwyn is trying to convince him not to go, he's like, look, they're killing women, they're killing children, they're killing farmers, people that can't fight. Somebody has to do something, and he takes off, and he finds a group of them, and he kills them, but it kills, you know, quote-unquote, kills him in the process.
Right.
The only thing was how much time has elapsed, because when this flashback first starts, Duncan has, like, 5 o'clock shadow. But at the end of the flashback, he's got a full beard. And I thought that was weird.
Yeah.
But after he fights the English that he finds, who, and by the way, another one of those moments where I was really surprised with the image that they showed going into that last flashback, where it's a family of people hanging from a tree.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
That was intense.
Like, I don't feel like you could get away with that today necessarily. Not in this show. Not if the show is supposed to be sort of an... Because this isn't really like a...
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, this would have been like a tea for teen type show, I feel like, for the most part. I don't know. It just that...
I don't know. They got away with stuff being syndicated. Like,
that's true. But again, we've talked about it before with like when they show somebody falling from a high window and we see the dummy go all the way down to the ground.
Like, true.
So I had completely forgotten that shot was in this.
Yeah.
But after that, Duncan wakes up back at the house, and Ciaradwyn is there, and she's talking to him, and he's lamenting that he's becoming the thing he hates. And she's sort of talking him down from it and being like, maybe fighting isn't always the answer. Maybe you need to do something different. And it's a nice parallel and juxtaposition to what's going on present day, where she's reverted back to her warrior ways and she's snapped.
Right.
And Duncan is trying to convince her not to.
Yeah.
So
that's the one thing I almost wish they had. I think it would have been really on the nose for him to say, hey, remember in 1746 when you talked me down? But just, you know, a little mention of it.
Yeah.
Or just a hint of it would have been nice.
True.
I don't know how they could have done that, but yeah. It's one of those things. I'm okay that it's not in there, but it would have been a nice little wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the rest of us.
Oh, know, sure.
The flashbacks and I think, the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I think the only thing is, how do you do that without it just being way too on the nose? But you're right. But overall, like they're good flashbacks. They didn't do any filtering or anything on the second flashback either, which is nice because that visually sets it apart from the other one. So with an audience, if you come in part way, or you catch certain parts of it, or however it goes, you can tell these are two distinctly different time periods.
Right.
In a way that visually is quick, and I didn't feel tropey either.
Right. And again, visually, the way they have been transitioning into and out of flashbacks was really good this episode. Like, somebody was really on their editing game with this one.
They're trying new things, right? You can tell they're getting some of those digital effects to be able to do transitions where they can have a moment where they kind of split the background and without it having to be necessarily shot on a green screen. And I liked that. I liked how they did that.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah, good stuff from flashbacks overall.
Mac, are you looking for a way to stop her or a reason not to?
Either one works for me.
So one of the things that I enjoyed about this episode was the Richie subplot and how they were able to continue that from the previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's nice about that is that kind of gives you, if you're binging through it, it's connective tissue between episodes without having to have each episode. Like, you can watch this one having not seen the Mythos episode and this is fine. But that just gives you more context.
For sure.
And I like that. And the stuff they're doing with Richie, again, this is the way that Richie's as a character is responding to what's happening is so much better than the season one version of him, both as a character and as he was written, would have.
Right.
With it still being like, Richie, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I also like putting those stakes in. I think the only thing I would have changed is maybe not have it where Basil died as well. But I also sort of get it, because they got to have, like, that's got to be that extra emotional weight on Richie. Not only has he thrown his whole life into turmoil, but he also is responsible for the loss of another life. And as Duncan puts it, he's got to live with that now.
Right. The only thing about it, though, is we know a lot more from Richie's side of it that Basil was just being an a-hole to him the whole time. Like, surprised Richie hadn't thrown a punch before now. And I think they filmed it and set it up enough that, you know, and even after, when Richie comes back to the barge, he's like, you know, I honestly did not think that was going to happen. And Duncan's like, well, it happened and you got to live with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we definitely get mature Richie, but I think there's part of the racing where we get more attitude Richie,
mm-hmm.
having gone through the trials and dealing with Basil and everything. It's like more not a cocky kid attitude, but mature. This isn't like things aren't easy on my side, even though it's just, you know, bike racing. This wasn't like just some random thing. This dude's been a complete jerk to me this entire time, you know, like he did with the last guy. And we're building on that this episode. Like, if all that had happened in this episode, it would have felt rushed. The fact that we got it over two episodes definitely gives us space for that story. But it's interesting at the end that I think it works that Basil dies, and that adds weight to not only Richie's death, but the way he died, taking out somebody else and just being that weight on him. But I loved Duncan's response to him, though, when he said, Richie's like, what does this mean? Well, you're dead in France, probably dead in Europe for a generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is how it goes.
And you got to live with it. And I also liked how when Richie's response to that was, did you ever mess up like this? And Duncan's like, it happens. Yeah.
Well, his exact word I wrote down was sometimes, like, not maybe. It was like, yeah.
Yeah.
And we may never see something quite like that. I can't remember if there's anything where it was somebody Duncan was specifically trying to kill.
What was great about it, though, was like Richie. So you do get some cocky kind of bristling from Richie, like when Duncan's first sort of talking to him about like, hey, look, maybe you're pushing a little hard. You know, do you think you'd be pushing this hard if you knew you if you didn't know you could break your leg in three places and walk away from it?
Mm-hmm.
And Richie's kind of like, what are you trying to say? Like, he's not quite getting where Duncan's coming from, but he knows.
He immediately laughs back and says, what, do you think I'm cheating? And Duncan's like, what do you think it is?
Well, and that's the difference between experience, right? This is the Duncan who probably did something similar to this when he was younger in some way, right? Like fought wars or fought battles in a way that a normal person wouldn't take those kinds of risks because he knew that he could survive it.
Right.
So that's that part of it. And I liked that. And then I like Richie still pushing it, still doing what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And then when everything ends, there isn't the forced, like, when Richie first took a head in season two, one of the things that you and I didn't like was that we felt like the way Duncan reacted to that didn't make sense for their relationship. And the fact that Duncan basically just kicked him out.
Right.
This time around, Richie messes up, arguably, like, messes up in a lot worse way. And Duncan doesn't immediately flip on him and like make him feel tiny and insignificant and stupid for it. He's just like, this kind of thing happens. Yeah, it's happened to me before. You've got to live with that. But he doesn't make him leave. He does tell him, you know, look, your life's done here in Paris, implying that he has to go somewhere, but more so for his own protection and not because Duncan's upset with him, which is, I think, the thing that bothered both of us in that first episode where Richie takes a head, is that it felt like Duncan was angry with Richie.
Yeah, for not a really good reason. This time around, he's upset with Richie, but I think he understands too that it was somewhat accidental. and that, hey, Richie, sorry, accident or not,
yeah,
you're done here for now. Like,
mm-hmm. But where before it almost felt like Duncan was kind of telling Richie, like, we're done, you have mm-hmm. to leave. Now it's like, you stepped in it, you've got to go.
Right.
But I'm always going to be here to help you. So it mm-hmm. felt more like that mentor fatherly thing than what we had seen previously. So, mm-hmm. And as usual, great work out of Stan Kirsch playing the part because he captured the boiling, anger part of things. And he really had a sincere, like, I did not mean to kill anyone, or have that happen, and kind of realizing the fallout. So I really like that. We did get Maurice in this episode, and Maurice was Maurice, and he was great. Like, he's only got a couple of moments, but it was good stuff. I would say this
is a better Maurice episode, where it's like, yes, he's in there as, you know, the plucky friend, but he's also got a couple things where it's like, man, kids, am I right?
Yep, exactly.
Like, you know, and Duncan's just kind of like, yeah, kids, sure.
Yep. And we have Joe and Ann Lindsay in the episode again. Now this was a really cool thing. I'd forgotten. I knew we had at least one more episode with Ann in the series because I remembered her being in France at some point, but I couldn't remember how she ended up there. So at the end of the episode, Duncan has a conversation with Ciaradwyn, and she basically tells Duncan, look, if you love this woman, you don't make the decision for her.
Right.
Tell her, let her make that decision. Essentially, because that was her philosophy with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of reminding Duncan of that.
Because she was telling Duncan, like, after all this, I will take whatever pain it takes. I would trade it all
mm-hmm.
for the time I've had with him.
Yes.
Like, he was worth it.
Yep. All of it. And I like the fact that their conversation ends with her telling him, let her make the decision. And then we cut to Joe's bar.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne walking in with the bar, you know, not open yet. And such good work from Jim Burns again. Why can't I think of her name? Lisa Howard. Lisa Howard.
Right.
I just want to call her Anne Lindsay, but it's Lisa Howard. But good work from them. I love how that whole thing played out, because as soon as she walks in, like, you kind of know, okay, how, you know what's going to happen. You just don't know how it's going to happen.
Right.
And Joe sort of being like, let me pour you a drink. And her kind of trying to, he's like, no, you're going to want a drink.
Yeah. Like, if you didn't know this show and know what's coming, Joe looks like the creepiest dude in the world. Like, I'm sure Anne's like, what are you doing, dude? Like, he's complimenting her. She's such a strong woman.
Yep.
Let me pour you a drink. It's like,
and he hands her a letter saying it's from Duncan. And I like, too, mm-hmm. that he was like, you know all those things about Duncan that didn't make sense and he wouldn't explain? Well, it's time for the explanation. Like, such a well-written line, too.
Mm-hmm. And he delivers it so well and smoothly. It's just like...
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
So logistically, what I want to know is, how did they figure out the timing of when Duncan would call? That's the only thing I want to know, because it was so perfectly done. But I loved that, as he's handing her the note saying it's from Duncan, or handing her the, not even a note, it's a plane ticket, and says it's a ticket to Paris. She's like, I'm going to Paris. And he goes, well, that depends. And as soon as he says that, the phone rings and he picks it up and he doesn't even talk into it. He just hands her the receiver and says, it's for you. And it's Duncan on the other end, and her reaction to it. And I love, and that's where it ends. That's the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. Such a good way to end this episode.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, it's between the way things wrapped up with Richie's subplot
mm-hmm.
and then to have Joe and Anne be in the episode. And again, it's another way to write Joe into an episode where he doesn't have to just magically show up in France, even though as a watcher, he has there's all the plot armor they need to get him there.
Right. Let's back up a second. Just the way we ended things was Ciaradwyn. Like, the dudes were all coming to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
They had gotten guns this time, and they were like, shoot her in the head just to make sure she's not wearing a vest.
Yeah.
And figures it out. Him and Cardwin both disable everybody.
Yep.
Duncan's there to keep her from killing anybody, and she's like, ugh, this sucks. But you got to tell her, Duncan. Like,
yep.
After everything I just went through with my husband, you've got to give Anne a chance. And then we cut to the Joe and Anne
yep.
section, ending that way. Yeah. This was like a really emotional episode.
Mm-hmm.
And not like over dramatically emotional, but just hitting that line of like real emotion, like dealing with actual relationships. Like, this is one of those episodes where it's more about the relationships
yep.
than it is about the immortality per se. I mean, yes. It's about them being immortals and dealing with someone they care about that's mortal and what that relationship means to them. And there was some interesting talk about that. You know, should we have relationships with mortals? It's like, why not? Are we just going to, you know, be stuck to each other? We've got to live in this world with everybody. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, this is an emotional episode without being melodramatic.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to go over the top or anything like that. It's just there's emotion involved between mm-hmm. finding, you know, Richie's life changing forever and certainly in the immediate future, and Duncan going through the emotions that he's going through while also seeing a friend of his go through what he just dealt with a year earlier. And I loved mm-hmm. that line too, where he's yeah. talking about Tessa and he tells Ciaradwyn, she died too over a few dollars and a vehicle.
Right.
Basically the same thing. So he mm-hmm. knows exactly what she's feeling. So yeah, there's a lot of emotion in this episode, and then it ends on a very positive, exciting emotion for Duncan and Anne.
Right. We'll
see how it plays out. But
yeah.
It's a great way to end an emotional episode. And I quite enjoyed it. It's a very good episode. It was never like for me as a viewer, it's hard because when you go from Song of the Executioner to Star-Cross to Mythos, those three episodes ramped up and just kept getting better and better. And it's almost like at some point you have to crest and come back down on the roller coaster. You can only go up for so long. Mm-hmm. And this one did, but it's still very good. And it yeah. managed to tie that back up.
Yeah. This is one of those really cool episodes where there are immortals in it,
mm-hmm.
but they do not fight. There's not a taking of a head. There's not a quickening at all.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's still a super exciting and relevant episode of yeah. this series.
Yeah. And that is the thing that I am finding on this rewatch, that is surprising me, is how well the series did at not having to just follow its formula.
Right.
And mixing those things up and having some other things happen in the lives of these immortals that doesn't just have to be fighting and swords. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we see people with swords in their hands in this, but they don't really get used.
Not too much.
But yeah, this is a good episode. There is no final fight. It was kind of what we're alluding to.
Right.
There isn't one. So there's nothing to talk about there, but this is a good episode. It's definitely in the, like, season three has been so far quite good. There's very little we've, I think, passed our filler episodes.
Yeah.
Especially the really like, ooh man, that's really a filler one. Like mm-hmm. we might have a little up and down towards the end of this season. We've got five episodes left.
Yeah.
After tonight, and it'll be maybe a little fluctuation, but it's not going to be like, oh man, you can just skip this one completely. I don't think we're going to run into that. We've got some good stuff coming.
I was just looking back over the episode, like this whole season. This season feels like a really long season, I think, because we've had so much good stuff in it.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. There's not a lot that you're like, oh, we can just skip that. Oh, we don't need to see that one. I'm totally with that. You're right, because it has felt like a much longer season than, especially season two. I feel like season one had some really good stuff. Season two was a little more hit and miss.
Right.
So, yeah, this is a good one. Definitely check this one out. Mm-hmm. Did you watch it on IMDb TV or wherever? Did it have the weird, any weird, like, opening credits or transition stuff or anything again?
Credits are still the Tessa credits for whatever reason. I mean, it's the credits with Tessa and then Joe, but it's still that one. There was, was it the Amazing Grace episode that had like the immortal lady Duncan knew that was also a scientist?
Yes, I think so.
A little blurb of that showed up in the first flashback for me. I was like, what the heck? Not one of these again.
That is so weird. It was just a video.
Audio of the flashback played through. So you hear them talking about the Romans coming and stuff. I'm like, what? But like, just as I paused it to be like, oh no, is this screwed up? It came back and I never had any other issues. But yeah, that was weird.
That is so odd that that's happening. I don't understand that. And these are on IMDb or Amazon or where?
I've looked back. Every time it's happened, it's both on IMDb TV or on, what was I watching it on? Peacock or something?
Okay.
Yeah, on Peacock too. For whatever reason, IMDb TV does their ad breaks where they're supposed to a lot better with the show. Whatever reason, Peacock, it's just off. Just like for a few seconds enough that it's like, okay. And then we come back and it's like we finish the scene and then transition to the next one where, you know, you should put the ad break in there. So.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, I mean, however you're going to watch this, you know, we're coming up on the end of my, I only had on DVD the first three seasons when I had all my DVDs and I was watching them. I've digitized those. So I never bought the other three seasons because I stopped working at Suncoast Video.
Right.
And so I no longer had, I was no longer able to get them for like 40% off.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be probably transitioning to a lot of IMDb TV. So hopefully they got better as the seasons went on. We'll find out.
Yeah. And I think, let me see, check this out before on, like, if you want to like buy them, they're like 10, 15 bucks digitally anyways.
Yeah, I know. So, I probably should.
Looking at Apple right now, the first season is 10 bucks. Seasons 2 through 4 are 15. Seasons 5 is just 13 bucks, and season 6, 10 bucks. So,
no, that's nothing. Yeah.
You could buy them along the way as we're watching and not spend a whole lot of money at all.
True. Well, so next week's episode is called Testimony. Mm-hmm. And as we know, with the way this one ended, Anne's on her way to Paris.
Yeah.
So should be pretty fun. Now, if you enjoy listening to this show and you want to see us record it live, we do that on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, twitch.tv/TV's Travis. You can hang out with us and be like Ace, be like Amy in the chat. JF Dubow was in here earlier.
Yep.
We
and
love
even with Thanksgiving coming up, we'll still be back next week. So
absolutely. Yep. We are here most weeks. The only time really is we'll take a couple of weeks off in between seasons just to kind of refresh and recharge. But yeah, we're here all the time. And then the show comes out as a podcast Thursday mornings. And you can get that at anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander or anywhere you get your podcasts. Wherever you do listen, if you can leave a rating and review, that makes it more discoverable for other Highlander fans out there that you maybe don't know. So
yeah,
we appreciate that more than you know. And if you want to talk to us about Highlander or really anything, you can find me on Twitter at TV's Travis, and Audie, you are also on Twitter.
Yep, at oddlynormal1 with the one spelled out.
And as usual, your art this week was killer, and that is put up on Twitter as well. So if you ever want to check that out, check those out. They're great. And yeah, so next week is episode 18, Testimony. Should be fun. And remember, there can be only one time that Richie dies in a fiery motorcycle crash.
Let's hope.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.